Hello, hello, hello. Favi Fav here. And today we bring you another special episode. This time, it's a live episode that we recorded on June 5th, 2019 at the Marjorie Barrick Museum of Art at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And this episode is brought to you by the UNLV Department of Art and the Barrick Museum of Art. Thank you so much for having us. It was an incredible time just to be in an auditorium full of our friends, our family, longtime Latinos Who Lunch listeners, a lot of people that have been on the podcast before. And the recording, I will admit, at some point, there is some feedback noise here and there, some buzzing. So if you're listening in headphones, it might be a better idea to save this one for the car or for when you're, you know, you're cleaning the house on the weekend, because it's not buzzing in your ear. It sounds a lot better coming from computer speakers or from regular speakers. So just a warning on that. You'll start hearing that around like 30 minutes into the recording. It was just such a great time, but we couldn't not share this episode. So thank you to everybody that showed up, and we're just going to get right into it. We start off with introductions by the director of the Marjorie Barrick Museum of Art, Alicia Curlin, and then Marcus Sivan, the department chair from the Department of Art at UNLV, also does a short intro. You'll hear her voice, but I just want to let y'all know that Doctora Erika Abad from UNLV is also there. She's our guest of honor. She had this great idea to dive into queer Latinx TV shows. So we're going to talk about some of our favorites and kind of dissect them. Without further ado, here's our live episode at UNLV at the Barrick Museum of Art.
Okay, welcome everybody. Hi, can you hear me? Welcome. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. I love our community. This is exactly what we want to do here at the Barrick. I have 5 points. I hope that's not too long. One, I want to say without weeping that the three people up here are such a huge inspiration. Don't cry. For me and everybody in this city. Two, we're super proud to say that they are either based at UNLV or from UNLV and based in Las Vegas. Yes. Okay. I forgot to introduce myself. My name's Alicia. I'm the director of the museum. thank you. thank you to Marcus. Marcus Sivan, if you haven't met him yet, everybody knows Marcus. He's the chair of the Department of Art, and this program would not be possible without all of his support and the department's support, so thank you. And four, if you haven't seen Sorry for the Mess, that's the exhibition in the exhibition hall just across the lobby. Now's your chance tonight. You have until August 3rd to see that. It's wonderful. Thank you to Marcus also for your support for that exhibition. And I'm just so glad that you guys are here. Quick plug for what we have coming up this summer. There's a community art day. This is the fourth one that we've done. We bring in hundreds of people during one day when before, during our summer, we would bring in maybe like 400 people the entire summer. So this one has story time, plant making with Favi Fav, and many other things, including Mr. Rogers' screening here in the auditorium. So I'm really excited about that, yeah. July 20th, 12 to 5 p.m. It's completely free. Parking is free. Anybody can come. All are welcome. And we have posters on our reception desk, so please pick those up. Now I'm going to hand it over to you, Marcus. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Alicia. Hi, my name is Marcus Sivan. I'm the chair of the Department of Art at UNLV. Do we have any Department of Art alum in the audience? Do we have any current Department of Art students? I know we do. They're shy. They're shy, but they're awesome. if you will indulge it, I did want to play a little bit of a game. I was conceiving this as we were just sitting across the hall talking, and so I didn't let our hosts or our visiting critic know we were going to try this, but we'll just try it. So actually, I've discovered through being a Latinos Who Lunch binge listener that actually asking people about what they had for lunch is a really cool exercise. I wonder if you all will humor me, and I hope our artists will humor me, and just turning maybe to somebody you don't know in the audience sitting near you and asking them what they had for lunch. And then, you know, telling them if you're the person who's asked you. Wow. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get people to stop. Okay. 10 more seconds. All right. Give yourselves a round of applause. See, it's pretty powerful. I think also in Las Vegas, we're experiencing something of a podcast revolution. And I noticed, I think Spicy Eyes might be represented here, and which is great. And also Wild and Free podcast. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Lots of insider secrets in the audience, people who know things about podcasts. Without further ado, when I first was coming to Las Vegas and trying to learn about the place, Emmanuel and Justin were sort of my Bibles that I was trying to research everything on and ask them all of the questions about this place. And I hope that they still let me do this. And for me, I have to say honestly that Justin and Emmanuel really are the history of the Department of Art for me, and the storytellers of it, and the holders of some of this stuff. So there have been a lot of times where I've been trying to figure something out, and these gentlemen have been very, very helpful. So I want to point out that I'm always happy to be in the presence of doctors. We have two on stage tonight. if you don't know, Dr. Emmanuel Ortega is an expert in colonial histories, in addition to, I think, being an expert of the modern and contemporary as well, but his specialty is in colonial histories. To listen to him talk every time I see him, I learn so much. His classes at many different institutions, but particularly where he is now at UIC in Chicago, which stands for University... I'm going to get it wrong.
Of Illinois.
Okay, University of Illinois at Chicago, are wildly, wildly popular. So go study with this man. Dr. Erica Abad also has a Chicago connection. Grew up formatively in Chicago, asked me to tell you that she really loves television, which I think is true. She also is humble, really loves writing, so she must be writing while she is watching TV sometimes. Yeah. Her critique and her writing as well, I think, will be really important for the future of this university, of UNLV, and her voice is one that we really need here, we're really lucky to have. Justin Favela is, I think he has been a professor at many different places, but it's not a doctor of anything that I know. No? I thought you were going to say something. If you don't know Justin and his artwork, he is, I think, one of the trailblazers of his generation. He is an art star with a capital A, capital R, capital T, capital S, capital T, capital A, capital R, and has been been showing everywhere, and I think he doesn't sleep. There's so much work that comes out of this artist, and he. One of the really special things about Justin is that he creates a circle around himself that is incredibly inclusive and generous and involves a lot of other artists as well. So that's my introduction. So without further ado, welcome to this live taping of Latinos Who Lunch.
Hi, this is Fabi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are Latinos Who Lunch, the podcast where we talk about important things like
Latinos on TV who are awesome.
Yeah! Hello, hello, hello.
Crucial.
How are you, Babelito?
I am trying not to cry. I'm not gonna lie.
Let it out, bitch.
I'm overwhelmed. You know, I was just thinking that when we first started, we had to borrow equipment. And the person that we borrowed the equipment from is right here. Ed. That's so crazy. Like, it's a full circle. Anyway, I'm overwhelmed. It's amazing. Thank you, everybody. How are you?
I am also overwhelmed. We have done these live shows all over. I think we've done 5 live shows this year across the United States. And this is the first time I'm nervous.
True.
I just love so many people in this room. And it just warms my heart to see, you know, our community show up and show out. So Thank you all for coming today. Thank you to the Barrick Museum of Art. Alicia, you are amazing. Thank you so much for being one of our biggest advocates.
Right.
It's just night and day. To feel so supported by an institution that I almost gave up on is just incredible. So thank you. And Marcus Sivan, has helped me so much just in the past few months. I did the show with my friend Ramiro Gomez, Sorry for the Mess, and Marcus said, you need a studio? And I had a studio at the art department, and, it's talk about night and day. Y'all, have you been to the art department lately? Oh my gosh. There's actually shit happening for the students. It's incredible. It's incredible. So thank you, Marcus, for all the change you've already helped make here at UNLV. It's so important. See, look at white people shining over there. That's so nice. Si se puede. Okay. All right. And last but not least, I'm going to let Babelito introduce our guest of honor today.
So we have with us, once again, one of our favorite guests, and we always indulge in Latinx representation, Dr. Erika Abad. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
I think we actually started this conversation last year, right?
We started the conversation here because I was introduced to you by Alicia.
Ay, verdad.
true.
And if you want to get to know Dr. Erika Abad a little bit better, there is a full episode that we did with her called Erika Gets the Job Done. So you can go back into the archives and listen to that wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thanks. Yeah, that was fun. And this one's fun.
We got into Lin-Manuel Miranda.
We did.
Yes. But that's a whole nother episode.
Especially when In the Heights comes out, which stars Lynn from Vida, right? That's what I was talking to you about? I don't know when it's coming out, but...
Melissa Barrera.
Melissa Barrera.
Yes, she looks like a Disney character. Nice. Her eyes and those eyebrows. Okay, mm-hmm. So, we are Latinos Who Lunch, and actually, the person that came up with that name is here today, Jennifer Clevin, right over there. Babelito and I... We used to go to Zumba a lot, and with Jen and our friend Christy, so many people that are here. And so We were trying to come up with a name because we had borrowed the equipment from Ed, and we were like, okay, what are we going to be? We have to have like it has to be a Spanglish title, right? Like, and so we were like going through this list of names, and we're like, we want it to be queer, we want it to be Latino. What can it be? And Jen just turned to us and she's like, Latinos Who Lunch.
Like Ladies Who Lunch.
Like Ladies Who Lunch.
And we're like, wow!
That was our name. And it also ties to the art world, since Babelito's an art historian. I'm an artist, you know, the tastemakers in the beginning of kind of like the art century. Market here in the United States were the Ladies Who Lunch. That's why you see a bunch of Impressionist paintings everywhere, because those ladies were the ones collecting art,
and
right?
Picasso's, yes.
Oh, and Picasso's. Oh, how can we forget?
Don't get me started.
So anyway, in the tradition of Latinos Who Lunch, we'll start by talking about what we had for lunch today. And none of us actually ate together, so this is going to be interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Erika?
Well, I mean, I just had leftovers. I had I had salmon that comes pre-seasoned. I don't know if you've seen these at the grocery stores, the one that doesn't accept credit cards. And another one who does accept credit cards has them, which makes my life so much easier.
What is
it?
Smith?
Smith doesn't accept credit cards.
Anyway. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. You've forgotten. and then I had carne with vodka sauce and ground turkey.
Mm. Utanesca, which doesn't mean the same thing in Spanish, but we're not going to get into it.
We're not.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I also had leftovers, Thai food, pad say you, that's my favorite. That's what I had. And with fried rice.
Are you still vegetarian?
Yes. Yo, I went to the grocery. So 2 days ago was like my first day off in a very long time. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna get high and watch TV. And so I did that, but then I got hungry, right? So I went to the store and. I'm like, oh my God, I'm vegan. I don't know what I'm gonna get. So I got a big ass thing of soy ice cream. And then I went home and I started eating this thing of soy ice cream while watching Black-ish. And I was like, this is not satisfying. this is not the texture I want. And so I found, I bought my nieces a bunch of cereal because I babysit them once in a while. And I had this whole thing of Trix in the pantry.
Trix.
Girl. Oh, my God. So I poured Trix into, into the soy bucket.
Shit.
And I ate the whole fucking thing. And they're right.
That deserves an applause.
Trix are for kids, because I was paying for it the next day. So. But anyway, I felt so guilty that the next day I went to Sprouts and I just bought all the vegetables. My fridge, y'all, looks like Martha Stewart's fridge right now. There's like the beets with the greens on them.
White asparagus.
I'm about to juice the shit out of that.
Yeah.
But really, they're all gonna rot. So if anybody needs some snap peas, let me know.
My lunch is gonna sound boring after that.
Well,
I had scones and bologna.
What?
That's what I said.
You all know, like, if you listen to the podcast.
Together?
No, girl. No.
Okay, good. Okay.
I woke up and I didn't have hunger. Ay, el espanglish. I wasn't hungry, so I just had a scone in my coffee, which I do all the time. And then I went back home and there was bologna. And there was fucking turkey bologna, which is bullshit, but it still tasted good. And then I just had scones that Alicia got for us, so that's it.
Great.
Yeah, boring is not tricks, but you know.
Yeah.
So I'm hungry after this, so we should go somewhere.
We should.
Yeah.
All right, so we're here today, like the poster says, so we have to talk about it. We're here to talk about Latinx representation in media. And I used to love watching TV. I don't
Me
have that
too.
Much time anymore, but now this is an excuse to really get into it because... Dr. Erika Abad, I heard you talking about Latinx representation at the Believer Festival. Shout out to Believer Mag, Believer Festival, Black Mountain Institute. That's right, yeah. Vegas, what a cultural hub, y'all. Okay, so the New York Times said it, not me.
Right?
So,
Yeah, so I heard you talking about Latinx representation and...
But it's queer.
Queer and yeah. Latinx representation. But so that's why we decided to kind of focus on 5 TV shows today, and it'll kind of give us a conversation starter.
Yeah.
I think we should just jump right into it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go.
So we'll show you the show, and if somebody hasn't seen the show, which I understand, we'll show like a 1-minute trailer so you can get a sense of it.
And there may be spoilers in the conversation.
Yeah, we'll discuss. So our favorite, Whitena, Gina Rodriguez. And this is, of course, from the show, Jane the Virgin. So let's watch, on the CW.
Wednesday, March 27th.
Michael's alive?
It's the Jane the Virgin season premiere.
Michael?
Jane?
We're actually not moving today because my husband just came back from the dead.
And if you've got questions...
So good to see you. Alive.
We've got answers.
I am Rogelio de la Vega. Rogelio de la Vega. Rogelio de la Vega.
Nothing?
Jane the Virgin. The final season begins Wednesday, March 27th on the CW.
Thanks for watching the CW YouTube channel. Click to subscribe and click the Watch More button to see more from your favorite shows.
Escape, escape, okay. Escape!
Says Twitter.
Okay. Ay, Dios mío. Okay. All right. So, Jane the Virgin, what do y'all think about that show?
So I was in grad school writing my dissertation. I was alone with my roommate, which I loved. So she became my best friend for like 3 days because I binge watched that shit. I love the element of soap opera in it. I love that the grandma was not translated. She was just speaking Spanish. So that was beautiful. I love the melodrama. Melodrama is ingrained in our blood since the 18th century. And I love that. I'm not going to get into it. Don't worry. So I really liked it. However, by the second season, it just felt, it's very extra.
Yeah.
It was too much, so I had to stop.
Have you seen the whole show?
I've seen the first season, the second season, the last season, and I started watching this past season.
Okay. So I saw the first season, and full disclosure, I'm a bad Latino. I don't like soap operas. I know. Okay, so.
I even watched the original soap opera.
No.
What?
Yeah.
What was it called?
Juana la Virgen.
Yeah.
Oh. Mismo premise. This is one of like
Where's the original from?
Venezuela, which is why all the characters are Venezolano.
Interesting.
That makes sense. Wow.
So Jane the Virgin, from what I gathered, is it's about this girl or woman, young woman, I should say, and she gets accidentally artificially inseminated.
Yeah.
Damn that.
By the lesbian doctor who got confused.
Oh, makes sense.
Because she was having like a meltdown or something like that, right?
Yeah.
She was going through
it.
Okay.
I forgot about that.
And then Jane doesn't know who her father is, right? So there's that.
Yes.
And then there's a hotel owner for some reason.
Who's the baby daddy?
Oh, wow.
And it ends up the same premise of all soap operas.
Yep.
Okay.
Which is brown girl, rich and poor, rich white dude. Somehow we meet each other in the street and we don't know each other. Fuck, guess what? You're my baby daddy. Like, that happens in every single soap opera.
So, well,
right?
You forgot to add that she's an employee of the baby daddy.
But, I mean, to add to the class distinction, of course,
right.
Of course. Yeah.
Wow.
And then she ends up really being rich because her father's famous.
Oh, see, I didn't get that far.
That's why Jaime Camille is in there. That's her dad. And so he plays a soap opera actor who tries to cross over.
No, I can't. But yeah. What do you think of the show? Like, did you... Because it is an important show because it was one of the first shows to actually have all this Latinx visibility.
Mm-hmm.
So for that, we'll give it a pass. Yeah, completely racist Afro-descendants, but that's every fucking show.
Comes
yes.
in, but
yeah.
She's not a recurring character. She's not on the bill, but
right.
She's also Rosario Dawson.
Right.
And she's also queer. Yay!
Bravo. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. So Rosario Dawson's character is JR, and... was written because fans kept pairing Jane with Petra, and so they wanted to appease fans, aka sustain interest, so they wrote in JR, whose real name is Jane, and she's a love interest for Petra, who eventually comes out as bi. And they're not crazy lesbians like the first one.
Oh, okay.
So they fixed the crazy lesbian mistake with having complex characters who were lesbian or queer women.
So I feel like as viewers, we tend to do this. We tend to grab onto the little triumphs of shows like this. Like, oh, there's a lesbian character, so I'm going to watch it. But then you put it in the big scope, and there's like all these problems embedded in the shows.
Yeah.
And I'm in a point in my life where I have no patience. So tell me why I should go back to the show.
So go back to the show. Spoilers. So go back to the show because the people in... So one is based on Latin American content. And a lot of Latino shows where we have one or two Latinas or Latinos tend to have that thing that is called the token or white people in the room.
Yeah.
One.
Like art history department.
Like art history. Two, it's a Latino dominant show that you don't have to pay. Well, now you have to because it's going to be on Netflix and it's ending this year. But when it was on air, it was a Latino dominant show with Latinos in the writing room.
And it was like one of the
few
ones
that you didn't have to pay for.
Right.
So thank you, Jane the Virgin. It won a Golden Globe its first season. On top of that, what they do, and most of it is straight with Latina sexual agency. I'm all here for. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, just imagine taking your grandmother to a sex toy shop because that happens in this show.
Amen.
The grandma.
And then you actually see the grandma use the toy.
Wow.
Not like literally because it's CW, but you see her going in the blanket with the dildo. Oh my God, right?
Oh my God. Wow. Okay. No, and I love the grandma in the show because she never, like Babelito mentioned at the beginning, she only speaks Spanish on the show, and it's never translated. So it's like either you know what she's saying. I mean, you can just tell by her tone what she's saying usually.
Yeah.
But that's to me, that's very powerful. And you were telling me that it's not the first time it's ever happened on television.
No, this is how much I watch television. Because I was in the house that grew up where you're like, if there's a Latino on TV, we have to watch it. So Freddie Prinze, whose father was... Junior, whose father was Freddie Prinze, a.k.a. the Hungry Rican, wanted to produce a show probably almost 20 years ago called Freddie. It was about a Puerto Rican living in Chicago. Don't ask me what he did for a living. But his grandmother on the show, she was subtitled, but she was never translated on the show.
Yeah.
And so Alba is not the first. She's just the one who lasted the longest.
I've never seen that before, and that's actually the hook for me. I was like, is this a mistake? So I watched the second episode. I'm like, okay, I'm here for this. Like,
yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. And you know, when I think about it, there's a lot of old shows like I Love Lucy.
I mean,
Desi Arnaz, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's Cuban, right?
Yes.
Was Cuban, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was Latino representation. Maybe not the best.
Yeah, but I think what's been different about this year is that most of the representation is queer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Queer as in lesbian, queer as in bisexual, queer as in trans, and that we have choices. And they're not all light-skinned.
And it's not just a token.
Yeah. Whether or not you have to pay to see these shows is a completely different conversation. But we have choices, and it's being normalized, in a way that we can talk up most of these shows, if they're not talking about immigration, they're talking about poverty. And not poverty in terms of poverty porn, but poverty in terms of how do we get out of this and not screw ourselves over.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. And in terms of the queer characters, they're not all the traditional coming out stories. They're not like Callie, who has the religious father who rejects her. Callie Torres of Grey's Anatomy fame, who's now a Madam Secretary. But we're not talking about that. But we're going to historically contextualize because I watch all things brown. But what we have now is we have Latino queer characters who have coming out stories that aren't sad and that aren't about rejection.
And I'm all about that. I'm all about them being human beings and then Latino and then queer as opposed to the other way around, because we've been represented the other way around. It's all about the tragic queer Latinx story, and they just happen to be part of the story.
Yeah.
You know, it's just at the background, and I don't have patience for that.
Yeah.
And they're not the driving force. And
right.
With shows, and I think I literally started watching Jane again because of JR. I thought, a show is going to listen to fans and create a character to appease our interests?
Ge-ge.
What? Consumer-driven television? I'm done. And it wasn't a sad story, and it was Rosario Dawson being sexy Rosario Dawson. And yet, it was adding a layer of complexity to Jane, where not all the villains stay villains.
Right.
And not everyone you feel sorry for throughout the show. Like, it does a really good job of adding complexity to characters in ways that have us question. Yes, it does the rich guy, poor girl thing.
We'll get into that with Casa de los
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
But...
So speaking of villains, Gina Rodriguez. So I know more about Gina Rodriguez because of kind of the negative press she's been getting by all of these like pro, you know, POC publications. Because she says a lot of wild shit.
And she cries too, right?
And she cries a lot. And this is something that we've been talking a lot actually on Latinos Who Lunch. Because somebody called me white one day, and I was like, me?
Shooketh.
What are you talking about? And as our friends at the podcast Tea with Queen and Jay.
Shout out.
Like, yeah, just like Gina Rodriguez, you are also a TV Italian. Like, you can play an Italian on TV. You have white privilege. You have passing privilege if you want. And I never thought of that before. And then I, like, started just, like, crying and looking at family photos. And I'm like, my mom's name is Blanca. He's right. So, my mom's name is white, okay? So... Oh, there's a portrait of her in the show if you want to see her. Okay, so you know, and I talk about RuPaul's Drag Race a lot too, and RuPaul's one of these people too. Like, when celebrities are surrounded by a lot of white friends, a lot of rich white people, they say some wild shit, y'all.
Some stupid shit.
Yeah, and Gina Rodriguez is one
we
of them.
Are the
I have
girl.
Receipts. Okay. So let me just, I'm just going to pull up twitter.com. and this was a tweet from July 23rd, 2017. Marvel and DC are killing it in the inclusion in women. but where are the Latinos? Asking for a friend, right? And so this was after, this was kind of a conversation around the upcoming Black Panther movie, right? Because everybody, all the Latinos were like, where's our Black Panther, right? And so this to the naked eye, all right, or to the white eye, may not be offensive, but here's a response to this and why this is so offensive. So this is by Indie Acoustic, but make it black, at CN Rush. I honestly wonder how black Latinas like Gina Torres, Tatiana Ali, Tessa Thompson, and even the perpetually lost Zoe Saldana feel about Gina Rodriguez's consistent jabs at black women, right? So what happens a lot within our own community as Latinos is because we don't recognize our own white privilege, we erase Afro-Latinidad. Right. So that is one thing that I think is so important right now. And I've been talking a lot about it with my friends about like recognizing our light skin privilege as light skin Latinos and recognizing that Afro-Latinidad is erased from our stories. And most of the shows that we're going to talk about today have maybe one character that's Afro-Latino,
for
right?
two Same episodes.
Yeah.
Oh, except for the last, yeah. So, this isn't even the worst of it. A lot of times, Gina Rodriguez is included in, like, POC women interviews, and people will say something like, you know, congratulations, you're such a role model to black women, to a black actress. And she's done this several times where she gets in front of the mic and she says, all women, right? Not just black women, all women.
But that's
right?
That's precisely the fallacy of sentiments of nationhood in Latin America, mm-hmm. that it puts us all under the same umbrella according to political limits. So we're all Mexicans, it doesn't matter what color we are. We're all Dominicanos, it doesn't matter what color we are.
When
the very basic foundation of the nation, it's through race, it's through class difference.
And one of the things I wanted to add to that, and I knew she was from like what is now called these Americas, but Letitia Wright is from Guyana, mm-hmm. which is in South America. And so technically, thinking about how we define Latinx, which is always in revision, to critique Black Panther's cast is to deny that
yeah.
that and focus on specific ethnic communities, right?
Somebody said that we got our Black Panther. Have you all seen Spy Kids? We got our superhero movie.
And we're getting Dora the Explorer.
Oh, shit! The representation we've been waiting for, girl. Wow, Dora the Explorer.
I mean, at least they're all Latino.
Yeah.
Except, I don't know what.
Except Wahlberg's the monkey. Yeah.
And the Wahlberg. But yeah. Yeah. I can't.
Okay, next show. We're running.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You could do Jade.
Okay, our
One Day at a Time.
On Netflix, One Day at a Time, which is actually a reboot, or not a reboot, a remake.
Remake. Of an all-white show.
This looks good already.
We have been through so much this year. I mean, the divorce. Lena came out to us. Soon Alex will be out of the house, married to his wife with her spray tan legs and fake boobs. I know his type. What? Total game changer. Gotta be honest, guys. I'm feeling great. I'm in work, my two kids, and I'm gonna go back to school. It's all amazing. I'm pretty sure I told you 3 times already, you need to get a summer job.
It's like what they say, do what you love and the money will follow.
Hi, baby. That's for rich white ladies who want to make jewelry.
It's not that big a deal.
You better check your tone.
Ooh, what happened?
He punched a kid from another school.
He said Beaner, Webbed, Pitbull.
Pitbull is the only one that's even close to accurate.
Should we call the police? Wait, the army. No, Oprah. Huh. She'll know what to do.
I'm a veteran with depression and anxiety, but this is my dream. You know, a great family. I already have a great job. When you add school on top of it, it's like I'm trying to do 3 things great, but I'm just doing them all badly.
You don't have to be a superwoman. There can only be one such woman in a family, and that is me.
Nailed it.
You need to celebrate all the good things happening in your life.
I don't understand why you need a gay club. We get it. You're here. You're queer. We're used to it. Move on.
Anita, what if someone told you not to talk about being Cuban?
I would kick them in the aguacates. Why'd you ask?
Okay, everybody, I have an announcement. I'm seeing somebody.
Ooh.
It is a man.
It is a stallion.
So we talked about this show in the podcast because we were worried about this show. Weary, my accent. first, we were like, are we down with Rita Moreno's fake Cuban accent? Are we down with the same formula of a live audience, fake laugh? I don't even know what's happening. And then I watched the whole thing, the whole season, and I loved so many things about it.
Yeah.
This show just got recently canceled. There was a big campaign.
After 3 seasons, right?
Yeah, after three seasons.
On Netflix.
And
Fuller House is still on, y'all. Just want to let y'all know
exactly.
That show is awful.
But this show attempted to do a lot of things in so little time. So I feel like they knew that they were not gonna last for a long time. So they packed all of the traumas of the Latinx community in one episode.
Yeah.
And I always say that in the first season, you can do a whole season on the first episode, a whole season on the second episode, and so on and so on. And I was back and forth, but I loved it. I watched the whole entire thing, and I encourage people to watch it because, yes, it's messy. Yes, it's problematic. Yeah, it has a lot of things, but at the core of it, they talk about a lot of stuff that nobody else is talking about in the Latinx community, just like depression. That episode was so important. That episode was so important, and I yet to see more things like that.
Yeah, and I think I was going to watch the show because Cristina Machado is one Puerto Rican. I'm from Chicago. I also love all things Chicago. But one of the things I loved about the show was the fan response. I went to Plexicon for the past 3 years. Because my student Nicole, who's in the audience, dragged me.
And what is Colexicon?
So Colexicon was a convention built in response to a lesbian death from a TV show, which is a colonial product, but that's for them to figure out. but last year and this year, they invited One Day at a Time, and it filled the room. And you have a Latino showrunner, Latino actresses talking to a predominantly white audience who love the coming out story. About all things Latinx. And then what was beautiful this year was Isabella Gomez was asked a question in Spanish, answered it in Spanish, and the person who plays their partner, Sid, who's part Mexican, didn't translate. And being in a white room, white dominant room, having that experience was beautiful. I mean, one at a time, not only does their activism on screen and does a lot, too much in an episode, some can argue, but it also does it off screen, right? With their hashtag One Vida at a Time last year when the family separations were happening, in terms of bringing to light all of these issues, but having follow-up conversations with fans. And Gloria is really good about having honest conversations with folks, Q&A about what it's like in the business. And I love that show because all of these people are intentionally accessible on social media.
It's not just passive politically. It's actually actively politically. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Do you?
I like the show. I mean, I like cheesy shows, and this one was pretty cheesy. It was
Rita Moreno. Like,
I think if you get past half, like if you get halfway through the first season, her accent, her You're Cuban accent gets better. Like she's great. But she's like over 80 at this point, right? Yeah. Oh my gosh, she's in better shape than me. Jesus Christ. And so it was just really great to see Rita Moreno, and especially with her history, you know, she was in West Side Story, and she's just like so old school Hollywood, so she does say a lot of problematic shit, but it's just, it was nice to see the multi-generational show. And I'm also a TV junkie. I would watch TV every day, all the time when I was a kid, so to have a Latinx show in the Norman Lear kind of legacy. You know, Norman Lear did All in the Family, The Jeffersons, Good Times. I think even he was part of like Roseanne. I don't know. We don't talk about her anymore. Rest in peace. So, oh my God, what a, okay. And so, all those macadamia nuts. So, to have the reboot, you know, this is a really interesting thing. Having all these remakes with Latinx cast is kind of becoming a trend. Because I just heard they're doing Party of Five. And it's going to be a Latinx cast. And the trauma porn is real, y'all. I think the family gets separated at the border. So the parents have to stay in Mexico. And then the Party of Five have to live together.
And they're mostly Huaytinos también.
And they're all Huaytinos, just like these people here. Actually, that guy's a Jewish guy. And I think both of the men are Jewish dudes, white dudes. This is definitely a trend with, I think, most of the shows, not all of them, most of the shows we're showing today.
So,
yes.
So why should we watch this show? Why should we go back to the show?
Watch the show and continue to watch the show and pray that it gets picked up by somebody that is a linear network, which is an on-air network, because it can't be picked up by another streaming site, which is why CBS All Access couldn't pick it up. Things you learn when you go to a con. Is because it does all of the things. It's a positive coming out story that doesn't just end with a coming out story. We get walked through the normalization process for Isabel in a beautiful way that is cheesy, but not campy.
Right.
And so we need those happy stories where mothers are accepting and fathers come around, spoiler alert, so that one, it can normalize it for Latinx families, because I think that normalization on TV helps, and because kids deserve to see that this is possible.
Right.
Yeah.
If I would have grown up with something half as good as this, it would have been a different story.
Yeah, I think it's the first show that I'm like, oh, I think I can show like my grandmother this to show her like the coming out process and how you know, how it affects people and in a safe way. You know, it definitely is a family program. So if any kids are having trouble coming out, this would be a nice show for them to watch with their family, even though those characters are so damn annoying. It's just so strange to watch TV shows with a laugh track now, just because they just seem so old. Because most of the shows that are on TV now are shot in like reality, like The Office style, you know.
Mm-hmm. It is comforting for a lot of people.
Yeah, it is comforting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear, so I'm friends with people from Les Watch TV, you make friends at cons. And one of the things, whenever she like hints on social media what's going on or whenever we talk about it, she's like, they are really sensitive to the difficult topics they address, and the laughter is authentic. And that's just nice to hear from someone who's in the room.
Right.
Making, literally, who's for not fun, but for the sake of documentation, has created a code to document and sustain the numbers of LGBT representation on screen. Because it's growing at the moment.
Yeah. All right.
Hopefully it continues to grow, but that's a whole nother.
Speaking of.
Hi.
This is probably, I think, one of the newest shows that's come out. It's called Vida.
Like my sweatshirt.
Yes. She's got an official Vida sweatshirt. Babelito and I actually got to interview the cast of Vida. I thought we could air it, but the audio's not that great. Sorry, y'all. But there's really great pictures on Instagram if you want to check it out. But let me show you a little preview of these white Latinos.
So we're called Whitinos.
Yes.
In the first episode.
Doesn't she look like a Disney character? Amazing. The first thing I told her when I saw her in person, I was like, girl, those brows. And she's like, I know. Oh, sorry. You can go back.
You just visiting Lala?
No. I live here now.
So you're taking over La Chinita then?
Yeah. It's called Vida now. Just Vida.
Swanky Insta-famous lounge.
We need to buck up if this is gonna work.
I'm ready to buck.
Good. If this building doesn't start making money, Nelson forecloses on us. They want to make it less ivy and more sleek. Feeling like I'm
finally done. Mexicans, we don't usually do things that way around here.
I am Mexican.
Oh, you could have fooled me.
Look, Emma, you passed.
When you find the right person, you realize you don't have to change anything about yourself.
You wanted to say something.
We were a detour, Lynn.
Do you feel like you got your shit together?
Fuck yeah. I'm operating on chingona level.
I need to be here for the girls.
Damn, she looks like a baby drag queen.
We got the puta and the blood. This wall is your bar. This says this is a safe space.
Help me shape this place.
Oh, it's gonna be iconic.
$5 for 3 months ago.
And then, yeah, watch it.
Tell them. Yeah, please cancel it. Put it in your calendars. Tell them Latinos Who Lunch sent you.
Yeah. I did interview Michelle Prada and said, Anzoátegui. It was awesome because they said everyone was nice and said it was generous enough to talk about the scene, spoiler alert, in season one where they're assaulted and what it was like and how the cast was around them and being in a room of queer fans who wanted to hear the story. It was beautiful to see how Sed was able to affirm them by their presence, while at the same time, talk about the difficulty of filming such a scene. One of the things, a kind of...
Sed is the person right there on the very right.
Yes, Sed is Eddie. Thank you.
Eddie, yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay.
One of the beautiful things that came among, as I was talking to fans, is that Sed is a non-binary person who is not thin, who plays a queer character. And not just a token, but a solid queer character with a complex storyline who's one of the main stars of the show, a.k.a. reasons to watch.
And that's the storyline that I want to see in this show that I haven't seen
yet.
Go ahead.
Let me just fill you in if you haven't seen the show a little bit. So basically the show starts with the death of Vida, which is the sisters in the middle there, their mother dies. And so they have to go back to this bar / housing, like apartment building with tenants and take over the building for their mother. And so I think Emma is from Chicago and she's some big wig person.
Yeah.
And she's like a hippie person mooching off of people.
Sugar baby?
Sugar baby, that's the name. Okay, so as soon as they get there, this is all in the first episode, so I'm not ruining anything. They find out that their mom was queer and living this whole life with Eddie, her husband, and the bar is kind of in shambles, but the bar is also a safe space for queer women in the community, and it's smack dab in the middle of
Boyle Heights,
which is being violently gentrified at the time. So some of those characters are in response to that gentrification story, I forgot her name. Does anybody know her name? The one on the very left? Mari, thank you. Mari, and then her fine ass brother, Carlos.
He is pretty.
Looking like Latino Aladdin up there. Show me the world. Okay. And then so, and then Nico is a new character.
Nico.
South American, I believe, that is introduced into this
Argentina
season.
Argentina y Boliviana.
Oh my God. And Nico is also very hot. So,
yes.
So yeah, and so this is the second season, and it just got renewed for a third season.
Woohoo!
Warning, like Babelito found out, don't watch this in public or with children.
There's
very
a lot
sexy
of sex.
Show.
I watched it in the airport.
Or you're a black.
The when you see the first scene of the second season, you'll think of me.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, I don't want you to think of me.
Oh my gosh. And if you guys are Latinos for Lunch listeners, you might remember an interview we did with Sancha. Sancha
That's
is
right,
predominantly
her music. Yes, it is.
She's predominantly featured. She's in it, girl.
And it's the first song.
Yes, yeah. She's featured in this whole season of Vida, which is really amazing. Okay, you were saying.
Okay, so I love this show for many reasons, but you know I'm the hater in the show, so I'm gonna go for it.
Do it.
There's two things I can't stand about this show. It's the clear distinction they make with this Whitinas and everybody else in Boyle Heights. Like, it's clear, and they separate. I don't know if it's the lighting or the light skin or what it is, but every scene, I just see these two white girls and all the brown people around them. And it's so evident to me that it's creating, that it's trying to, what all TV shows do, trying to celebrate diversity, but highlighting difference at the same time, which is what we've been raised on all the time. That's one. Two, it's what I was saying earlier, and I'm going to say it again, the gentrification of gentrification, which is making money off of gentrification. Now it's a hip thing. Now let's talk about it. Now I want to live in that neighborhood. Like, I would, like, I moved to Pilsen in Chicago because of that, because everybody's like, this is the new place. It was in, like, Forbes, like, best top 10 neighborhoods in the world to live in everything.
Aye.
And it's fucking painful. And people are being kicked out of their homes every single day. And while this type of shows do mention these sort of problems, they also are benefiting off of these problems.
That
and
was,
it's something that I cannot compensate.
And I remember, I think the LA Times did an article in which they were discussing how organizers in Boyle Heights were concerned because producers and creators weren't talking to every person trying to fight gentrification. And like you said, in essence, to borrow the word from the show, doing gentrification. And all I can liken it to is people fighting gentrification sometimes fight each other. And I say that as a Chicago resident who's worked with people trying to address urban displacement because nonprofits rely on numbers. I don't know what happened in Boyle Heights. I'm not speaking for Boyle Heights. I'm not trying to critique folks. I'm just going to straight say that out loud and make it clear. What I love about the show, though, because I'm also here to defend things, so that there's more brown things so we can normalize it, is that the white Tinas are not heroes.
Right.
You don't want to
like them.
They're
nuanced characters. That's true.
They're pieces of garbage in this show.
Yeah,
like,
they are.
Like, I'm Team Emma, but I'm Team Emma because... I know.
Y'all, who's seen the second season of Vida? Oh my God. Okay, so, me and you. Yo, Emma, this character in the center, Michelle Prada, she acts her ass off in this.
Yeah.
There's this scene.
I'm like,
I'm not gonna give it away too much. There's a scene where it's a pivotal moment where she finds out something about her sister, and the reaction. I felt it. It was just so good. Anyway, but she's still trash. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, but she's, I guess, and as a mixed class Latina, she's the trash I understand.
Yeah.
Because she
and
talks
it's
about
the trash that we need too.
Yeah.
It's what I was saying earlier. Let's do what the Jews did: disappear for 20 years, come back, and just be assholes in TV, and people are gonna start seeing us for different ways instead of just our Latinx or our queerness. We'll be humans,
you know?
You know, like, but it's just, I don't know, it's utopic, I guess.
But I think it's realistic. I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to do this show is because, you know, esta cosa. So people were complaining about the lack of Latinx representation on screen, and then they showed a picture of Javier Bardem, Antonio Banderas, and Penelope Cruz. I think I was like, Spaniards? Really? Oh my God. Even though Latinos buy 1 in 3 movie tickets. But I'm also like, okay, we buy 1 in 3 movie tickets, but why is no one talking about how many Latino shows there are with Latino producers, Latino writers, and Latino stars with complex stories?
Right.
And most of them are queer, which makes me happy, obviously. But, and one of the things I love about the show is that they're all queer. It's a Latino-dominant cast. I've met 3 of the actors, 2 because I interviewed them. One is a friend of Anita Revilla's, and I met them at a conference. And they're people who are invested in telling complicated stories of representation.
Right.
And I think we are at a point where that's necessary. We can talk about why it's on Stars. Well, we obviously know why it's on Stars, but we can also ask why shows like this aren't on ABC, aren't on CBS, but why it's easier for them to be on streaming sites and what we are learning in this moment. And what I love about the show is the gentrification, because sometimes we displace our own.
We do.
Yeah. Gentrification. I think that's going to be the name of a new show. Or Gentrifiers?
Gentrifiers.
Or something like that?
Yeah.
It was started as a YouTube show, and now it's... I think it was signed by Netflix.
Oh, my gosh.
Again, the gentrification of gentrification.
Yeah. Okay. So, speaking of queers... Yeah, Casa de las Flores. So I love this. You know what? I'm lying because I love this show. And this is actually a novela, too. It's a soap opera. But I think it's because it's only 30 minutes, maybe. I don't know. I'm trying to justify it in my brain. I can't. But
no commercials.
Oh, no commercials. That's what it is. I'm just going to play the preview so you can get a sense of this wonderful TV. Oh, sorry. This TV show here.
Esta es mi casa. La florería es el pilar de la familia. La gente dice que somos la familia perfecta. Y eso es lo que van a ver.
Es un día muy especial.
Se van a morir.
Ya sé.
Roberto.
¿Quién es Roberto?
Es la amante de mi papá.
¿Papá?
¿Papá?
Este cabaret es mío.
It's like the same exact name.
Mi casa de las flores es mucho más importante que este cabaretucho.
O sea, tú también eres de la casa chica. ¿Con rosa en tu cara? ¿No estás fumando?
Esclavo para relajarme un poco.
¿Qué has hecho de tu vida?
Mi expareja se volvió mujer.
José María.
Paulina.
Cosas que pasan.
Aquí no hay mentiras. No hay envidia. No hay nada más que puro amor.
No es nada malo. ¿Es amor prohibido, como dice Selena?
Sí, es eso. Okay. Amor prohibido.
Sí.
Right, and I think this show got picked up for a second season, so that's so exciting. All right, Casa de las Flores. So I'm sure you gathered. I mean, you pretty much saw the whole show in that preview.
Yeah.
You don't have to watch the first season; you're good. But the first episode is epic, y'all. It's that the father's lover ends up killing herself in the middle of this huge garden party for La Casa de las Flores, which is their family business, which is a big flower shop. And then all these truths start to unveil and the family starts to figure out all these different things. The son, for example, right in the middle, what's his name? Gael García Bernal's little brother?
Well, Diego plays, Luna's brother.
Yeah. Wow. He's actually has a secret relationship with like the family's financial advisor, who is a male. And then... Paulina used to be married to a trans woman, and then the one on the right, what's her name? I forgot her name.
Paulina.
Paulina, the one on the right.
Elena?
Elena is dating a black man from the United States. Ooh. it has a lot of different storylines, and it's just beautiful. I think it's a beautifully shot television show. The sets are incredible and all really super bright, super gay. And it ends up that the father And his lover, his mistress, has another Casa de las Flores that's not a flower shop. It's actually a drag queen cabaret. So there's drag queen characters in the show also. So, yeah. I love the show. I know that a lot of the storylines are kind of tropes within soap operas, but I think that's one of the reasons that I love it. And one of the main reasons that I love the show also is because of Veronica Castro. If y'all don't know who Veronica Castro is, Google her right now. No, not right now, after the show. And just see all her old videos. She is like a pop star from the 80s. She used to have her own talk show that I used to watch. Ooh, she's amazing.
Vengo después del corte.
And the queen of soap operas.
Vámonos, vámonos al dancing. That's my favorite.
Ándale, ándale, my darling. Oh, so good. Okay, this show, okay, the biggest binge watcher in my family is my mother.
Yes.
The week that I moved to Chicago, this show started, and I've been waiting for it, so I told my mom. She made me watch the whole entire thing in 2 days.
Of course she did.
Yeah, she's like, no, uno más. No, uno más. One time she was watching Club de Cuervos, and I changed the password because I didn't want certain people to use my Netflix, and she freaked the fuck out, and she called me. She's like, Emmanuel, I can get into Netflix. And I gave her the password, but they had just a TV remote control. It took them 2 hours to actually figure it out.
Ay, pobrecita.
Well, they couldn't figure it out. Bianca, my sister, shout out to my sisters are here. She's the one who, like, next morning she came in and, like, in 30 seconds she did it for them. She's like, no, es que tu papá no sabe. Anyway, yes, I'm Mexican. and I love melodrama. For this reason, I was all over this show. But again, I need to be critical. This show, when it came out, including my husband, everybody was obsessed with it. It's like, we have never seen anything like this before. It's so great. I'm like, people, calm down. Like, there's a lot of things in media like Casa de las Flores that just don't have that visibility because Netflix is becoming the new monopoly for Latinx media. So now it's very visible. It plays with a lot of tropes of class difference. This is due to the success of a movie called Nosotros los Nobles, which is a take on probably one of the most successful movies in Mexican history, Nosotros los Pobres, in the 1940s. If you watch Nosotros los Pobres, it's, again, one of the most successful, if not the most successful Mexican movie in history, and it's also one of the worst fucking movies. It's pure poverty porn. In the opening credits, they tell you, they're like, this is a movie about the most important feat in history, poverty, you know? It's so, so problematic. And that is a trope of the colonial period.
Yeah.
So that's why this show is so good, because they played with everything that we understand about class and race difference. I was excited to see the black character,
but then
he disappeared. Then he was gone. I only saw him for two episodes, and I was like, oh, okay. So
spoiler alert, replaced with a white Mexican.
Right, exactly. So, and it plays with the right comedy that we want. It plays with the melodrama that we want. And it plays with the class difference that we love to fantasize. Anxiety is about gaining a lot of weight. And I mean, gaining a lot of Freudian sleep. Anxiety is about gaining a lot of wealth and losing a lot of wealth have been part of Mexican visual culture for 500 years. And this is just another one of those shows. After saying that, the drag queen of Gloria Trevi gives me so much life, so I can't wait for the second season.
Yeah, I love the show, but those are my kind of two big critiques of the show. I mean, also, if y'all want to know what telenovelas usually look like, this is usually what the cast look like. And so those, I mean...
And Mexican film.
They're all Mexican, right? Yeah. So it's just so...
And painting.
Yeah, and paintings, yeah.
And sculpture.
Anyway, yes, the black character in the show, is much like a lot of black characters in shows like this, are props, basically, which is really unfortunate because I thought they were going to give him a more complex storyline and actually give him a little bit of humanity. I mean, he does
they
come
did,
back at
but
the
I mean,
end,
we just feel sorry for him, and it's just...
Yeah. And then also the drag queens. I don't like when...
I don't like when TV shows don't give drag queens
humanity.
Humanity either, right. And this show doesn't.
Right.
They never. I think they show a drag queen out of drag once. One of the characters takes her wig off at one point, like in the back. But the drag queens are usually always in drag, and they're not multidimensional, which I understand because they are not main characters; they're background characters. But at least to maybe show them like in
a B storyline or something,
or just show them like out of drag or going, you know what I mean? Just like
going home, comiendo tacos en la esquina, like something.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Jeez.
I mean, I think when I started watching it, I was hoping their dad was a drag queen.
No, wouldn't that be good?
Because that would have added so much
nuance.
So many nuance and layers to the thing. And I'm frustrated with the throwaway character and the illegality of cannabis. But then again, we also live in Vegas. So I'm kind of over it. But I know, but the scene of Veronica Crasto smoking weed, there's just like thinking about her heroism across telenovelas and just seeing her, it just gives me like a secret joy because it's like the queen of telenovelas smoking weed and then going to sell it. And I'm like, oh my God, I would love to see my grandmother's reaction to this.
Well, actually, I think she, not the weed part, but I think she reminds me of my grandma, and that's why I love her, because of the whole thing, like keeping up with the Joneses slash like nobody needs to know our secrets, you know? So the whole show is about hiding their secrets, you know, when they're all out in the open. So, one thing that I love about the show is that they have a family therapist, and they actually go to therapy on the show and kind of normalizes it.
Estoy enganchadísima con el tapín.
But then there's a storyline with the therapist, but I'm not going to ruin it, y'all. It's good. Okay. All right. And last, and certainly not least, Pose. So if y'all haven't seen Pose, it's on FX. Season 2, I believe.
June 11th.
Is coming out soon.
Not that I'm paying attention.
Focus, children. It is time we remind the world who we are. Jackpot.
Mother, what do we take?
Everything.
The category is... royalty.
As you wind up dancing with a whole bunch of junkies.
I want to be a star.
You ever consider joining the house?
What do you mean?
Well, the house is a family you get to choose.
I have bigger dreams of performing at some ball.
I have nowhere else to go.
Come in.
It's that white boy again. Is this your first time doing something like this? Whispering
love. Yes.
What exactly is a ball?
Balls are a gathering of people who are not welcome to gather anywhere else.
Darling, the champagne is burnt.
This is what it's like to be a person at the top of the rainbow room.
What's better, the dream or the reality?
The reality.
What do you want out of life?
I
want
to be treated like any other woman. That's my dream.
Twirl. Baby, you are our secret weapon.
And that is how you do a ball.
Yeah. Oh. So have you seen the show? Who's seen the show? Oh my gosh, the first episode when they break into the museum. Oh my God. Okay. So good. All right, talk about it.
It's an homage to ballroom culture and rewrites the trauma porn of Paris's burning and reminds us that Vogue was invented by black and brown queer folks and not by Madonna.
Mm-hmm.
Did I miss something?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, so Paris is Burning, the documentary that was made. I don't even know when it came out, but it was like filmed in like 19, same time, like 85, 86, 87, around then. And a lot of these characters in the show are based around the characters from the documentary. So Pepper LaBeija, for example, I think is loosely, they loosely based the character in the center there. I love this show, not only because it's super gay, but also because of the trans actors, the trans visibility within the show. And then also, it's it's not only visibility, but it's also a celebration. There is a lot of trauma within the show.
There is, yeah.
I will admit, but you know, Ryan Murphy, what are you going to do?
But what the beauty about the first episode, for example, is that we don't go forefront with their being trans or being queer, being
right.
gay. It's just
not
like
the story
you're fucking robbing a museum out of all this European material culture. The scene where she just touches, for example, an Egyptian sculpture, like she doesn't give a fuck. I'm like, oh my God, yes, please. So we learned that about them and then about the ball culture, and then we get to the trauma, right? As opposed to the other way around. So I respect that show for that. So, and it seems that a lot of the tropes that we've been complaining about, all these white Latinx shows, they seem to be working them in a much more nuanced way. So I respect this a lot more.
And I think they handle the trauma in a way where they realize they have to take care of each other because no one else is going to.
Right.
And thinking about that scene where she invites, I'm forgetting characters' names because I haven't seen it in a while. When she invites him to her house, I'm just like, this is what queer people have to do. And we still have to do, especially in this political moment, given that we can't use transgender in the CDC reports anymore. Not we, but the CDC. This story is as historically timed as it is, it's also becoming more relevant given how there's still a high rate of trans murders. There's still a high rate of transphobia and transphobic interactions with the state and in healthcare. There's only two states whose public aid will, Illinois and Oregon, if not Portland, Oregon itself, that will pay for gender reassignment surgery. And we get to see some of the historical foundational work of gender reassignment surgery in fictionalized and dramatized in this show in a way that says, ah, this is how hard it was back then.
Yeah, and I also think it's interesting that a lot of the characters, I think more than half of them here, are Afro-Latinas in the show.
Right.
It's not really discussed. Sometimes they will speak Spanish here and there. Mm-hmm. But I've been thinking about this a lot, actually. Years ago, I heard a podcast by Latino USA, and they told the story of hip-hop, but through the Latinx lens, right? And a lot of times, because of white supremacy, things are either just black and white. You know, the brown is also erased, right? So Latinos and black people together, they were the ones that invented hip-hop, right? In New York, and then I'm simplifying it, right? But a lot of times, the Latinos that were involved, their histories have been lost because, you know, hip-hop is only seen as an African-American art form, right, or rap, right? So to see the Latinidad in this show is
and
really...
And the Afro-Latinidad.
And the Afro-Latinidad in the show is really important because a lot of the black people also that were involved in that were in the scenes then we're also Afro-Latinos, right? A lot of Caribbean people, Puerto Ricans, especially New Yorkicans, right? So, mm-hmm. Which are they're their own thing.
They yes, they are.
When we were in New York.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. So I'm so happy that this show, even though, you know, it is a very watered down and glamorized version of what this was, I'm really happy that this show is on television. It's really incredible.
And they have trans people in their room. I remember
yes.
reading about how Janet Mock helped inform and, well, I think she directed a couple of episodes, but she also helped inform how to do love scenes appropriately. And so it's not this like exotic, they're not, trans folks aren't being fetishized, they're being represented appropriately. And they're having complex, difficult conversations with their partners about how they want their gender to look and feel like versus what their partners prefer. In ways that are honest, in ways that, you know, as cis folks probably don't really think about.
Yeah.
So to wrap up things, because I think we're running out of time,
yeah.
I want to know what is a good lesson about these shows and what it tells us about the future of media. Like, what is your hope after seeing this show? What is your warning after seeing these shows? And we can start with you, Justin, or we can start with Erica.
The fact that we had enough shows to boil it down
True.
To five shows, that was amazing to me.
Because there were seven.
Because there were seven. yeah, you're right. Okay. But, you know, I just remember
watching like the George Lopez show, and I was like, really, is this all we got, y'all? This is who's representing us. And so to have a variety of shows representing our culture, I think is great. And again, like Babelito said, to show the world that we're humans. I know this sounds really silly, but because of the way that the media paints us, Latinos, brown people, black people, they're not looked as human in this country a lot of times. And so y'all, for real, if there was thousands of Cocker Spaniels in cages in the border, we would have raised money to save them all already. Okay? So
in the
yeah, Sarah McLachlan would have been on it. So I think that you know, truly true diverse visibility, representation, it's been a long time coming. And what is it? 2055?
2054.
Yes.
Put it on your calendars.
Minorities will be the majority. So watch out. Yeah. And hopefully that's reflected in television, right? And I think we just need to keep talking about it and being critical so that things keep being made and made better. Even with Vida, one of the main characters in this season is a queer brown man who moves into the building, right? And they actually give
working
him...
Working on his PhD,
an academic, right? Who actually has lines and a personality. It's so cool. So I think they heard the complaints of the original, from the original season, and they actually added a brown character. And so I think it's so important that we keep talking about this before they take it away from us. Because right. If y'all remember, the early 90s, mid 90s, television was dominated by black TV shows, and they took those all away from us, right? So they can do the same thing now.
And if you're making TV shows, try to avoid drama as much as possible so that your shows continue to be syndicated. Speaking of black TV shows in the 90s.
Yes.
Cosby. Because there's going to be generations of people who aren't going to see Claire Huxtable.
But Living Single's on Hulu now.
I know. Yeah. Well, I don't think that should be rebooted, but I think it should, because it didn't get the credit it deserves, and it was better than Friends. And Friends creator said that they borrowed from them.
They based Friends off of Living Single, yeah.
Drops mic. We want to be in front of the screen as well as behind it, and I think the stronger shows, as complex, as many issues as Jane has, its powerful thing was that it had brown people behind it. Just because CW wants to be diverse and Netflix want to be diverse, it doesn't mean other shows, other stations can't be. And they shouldn't wait for people to build their backs off of others. I mean, I think like Sansha worked with Shonda, Lena Waithe worked with Ava, among others. Let's keep doing that. And let's not have all Latinos be white, because we're obviously not.
I think I'm still obviously pessimistic about it, because I see what's happening in film also, and our representation in film is just messy as fuck. And TV seems to be ahead of the game a little bit more. I want to see diversity from the top to the bottom and from the bottom to the top. Do not be fooled by visibility. We say in the podcast, visibility is a trap. It's very, very, we have to be very careful about that. I think we still have a long way to go, and because we're reaching that mark of 2054, I feel like we should be ahead of the game. I'm still gonna be looking with a very, very critical eye, but I hope to see more of that. When you have Latinx producers and Latinx writers and Latinx actors, sometimes you get magic, but sometimes you also get trash. It's mm-hmm. not. So I think we still have to be careful, but I just hope, as Justin said, that doesn't get taken away from us, because it seems to be a renaissance of Latinx representation. Also be careful with Netflix. They're taking a monopoly on our stories, and I am very cautious of that. Anything Hollywood adjacent, you have to be, it's suspicious.
I mean, that's why Always. One Day at a Time got canceled. They said it was because of ratings, but then... Let's Watch TV shared an article with me that the Nielsen rating was higher than Netflix said. It's being nominated for awards, and we have to tweet so that they can win them. And they can fill a room at Cannes. That's not because no one's watching the show.
Yeah.
And there were people who were willing to pay for chingadera.
Esta madre.
Esta madre, no. Petitions, and Gloria said, don't just keep tweeting and writing folks, right? And I think the lesson from One Day at a Time is also show creators, be wary of sending your contracts so that you can be streamed anywhere. And Sony just developed a streaming site so that you can do that, or a channel. Figure it out.
One can dream. One can dream.
One can dream.
Okay.
All right. Do we have time for questions? I'm not sure. If y'all need to leave, I know we've been here a while. We won't be offended, except I will. So, I know you guys. Okay, so is there any questions in the audience? Okay, great. We're going to come out here. We're actually recording this, so we want to get your voice for the recording.
Hello, super deep question. What were the other two shows?
So the other, there may have been more now that I'm thinking about the numbers. So Madam Secretary Hesara Ramirez, who plays a butch presenting bisexual married to a man, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Now I'm going to, there's going to be two more.
The hood one? What is that one?
What hood one?
What was the one you were talking about, Babalito? In My Hood? Or what is it called? On My Block. Oh, on sorry.
On My Block. Because this was a list of Latinx queer. And then the other one, Good Trouble has, I think, a Latinx queer, I was told. And then I forget, though he tweeted me and I fangirled for days. Wilson Cruz is on Star Trek Discovery, which is on CBS All Access.
Yeah, and then, I mean, there's like Club de Cuervos, Narcos.
Narcos Uno, Narcos Dos.
Brujas, or what is that?
Hey, don't watch it.
Trash.
Yeah. There's also Roswell on CW.
A colonial witch that ends up in a beach in Miami. It's just, ugh.
Yeah.
So stupid.
Ugly Betty, you know. That could be considered.
And then Charmed has a Puerto Rican lesbian.
Yeah. And who can forget Sofia Vergara in Modern Family?
We want to.
Our fave. Okay, any other questions?
But one at a time, because...
Come on, we need at least three questions to make it good. Okay. Wait.
Well, not really a question, just kind of a criticism of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I love the show, but they just did a Cinco de Mayo episode that was awful.
So there you go.
Dang. And see, Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Superstore. I feel like a really good next. Diverse show.
And then they had Rosa paired with Gina Guest starred as her girlfriend for a minute, and then they paired her with Carmen Esposito. And I get it, but couldn't she have been with someone brown?
I know.
Or black? Or tan?
Sad. Okay, one more question. Anybody? All right.
Hi, I'm actually a radio show host at UNLV Student Radio. The Rebel HD2, if you haven't checked it out, y'all, if your students coming back next semester, you'll be able to register for a class and get a radio show. That aside, I'm actually here to say I was wondering what your thoughts were on the whole issue of representation versus actual social change. I mean, I feel like the idea of representation is basically premised on the idea that you will be able to experience social change as a result of cultural change. And fundamentally, I don't disagree with that, but the way that cultural change is being realized, I'm not really sure that just putting in people... of different ethnicities, different sexualities, without actually leading us to the idea that these things are not exceptions to the rule, normalizing them essentially, will not allow us to have a true, you know, representation or true cultural change arising from that representation. And I was particularly interested in, like, how you see that in regard to like political change, you know, as you know, like climate change is also scheduled to be just around the corner, just like the, you know, majority-minority thing. And like how we get to the point where we got to have this white nationalism, like you know, basically defeated or, you know, made to be the last thing that we're considering, because that's going to take a lot of time and a lot of change and a lot of effort.
And
next on Latinos Who Lunch.
Right.
Next episode. No, I know a lot of the things that you talked about, we talk about on the show. And what were you going to say?
I was going to bring up what the conversation you were having at the Believer Fest and the Believer Fest in context. So one of the reasons, if we can tell our stories, we can bring things up to attention that other people, if we didn't bring these stories in a way that was accessible to them, would engage in, right? Going to the Believer Fest and having all of those writers of color was profound for me. I was concerned because the writers didn't look like the audience, but then the audience has to hear about all of these struggles they may not otherwise hear about because they weren't in attendance. It's a way, it's not the way. And I think some of the shows complicate that in ways when someone is looking for X, they get A, B, C, D, which they weren't intending. And with regards to these other issues, right, like these questions of representation, we were talking about that at the last one in terms of Latino podcasts and supporting one another. We need jobs, and not all of our jobs in social change pay. And so, but if we get paid here and then can work and bring attention to our students and help students become agents of social change, we can do that. I brought up the hashtag One Vida at a Time, and that was profound for me because a new show that had no guarantee was politically radical last summer, used a hashtag to bring attention to family separation. Party of Five, which we're critiqued and concerned about, is bringing attention to family separation. And there are gonna be people who are gonna look at the reboot and have to think about family separation because they want the reboot. And if that's what it takes, I'ma take it.
And I think all this visibility is also, it's a reflection of the times. We talked about this when it comes to Latinx and brown podcasts. We all came out at the same time because we all were pissed off at the same time. But also, we also have to be very careful because this is how sentimentality works. It's a political tool because we're taking advantage of this situation. We're taking advantage of what's happening right now. We're gonna milk those white tears. And this is why we have so many of these shows happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that aspect of it. There's that aspect of just simply making money and that aspect of using our stories for political purposes. For what political purposes? I mean, we can spend, again, a whole entire show talking about that. So this is why it's so essential to be critical, that when something comes out, don't just be excited about seeing that brown face or that black face on TV or the Latinx face on TV. Instead, question those things. Question these ideas, and hopefully that will lead to better shows that will lead to more radical change, as you were mentioning.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. So I want to start off with the comment of Desi Arnaz has a very special spot in my heart, or Ricky Ricardo. Anyone who speaks Spanish and you haven't gone back and watched I Love Lucy, I highly recommend it because it's so much funnier when you understand that Ricky Ricardo, when he goes off on Lucy, he's hilarious. What he says in Spanish, it's amazing. And just to think that, like, we had someone speaking Spanish in the 1950s on mainstream America. It's just amazing. So to me, Desi Arnaz always has a special heart or a special spot in my heart. That being said, though, all these shows you guys brought up, it was always of like, this is great, pero esto. This is going on with it. For you guys, what is the ideal show you want to see where we don't have to go pero, right? Or are we doomed as a Latino community to always be like, this is fantastic, pero, you know?
We are doomed.
I mean, honestly, there's no perfect shows. I mean, there's so many of you here that probably watch Friends and Grey's Anatomy. Those shows are trash sometimes, and people are critical of them, but nobody looks at it as an attack on white people. Just because these shows are about Latinos, it becomes a greater conversation, and then people think we're being, like, critical on ourselves, you know? So
I think that it's you know, like all great art, it should be criticized, right? We should be critical about it. So I just made that up right now, and it sounded great. So
it was pretty dope. It was pretty dope.
Right? The last season of Friends, really.
Oh, God.
They didn't need to do that.
No, they didn't. And I think to backpack off of Justin, if we think of an ideal, it will need to be fixed. Because what we're not talking about, and when I was thinking about all of my shows that I watch, with the exception of One Day at a Time, they don't talk about disability. They and even One Day at a Time talks about the invisible one. We don't talk about the visible ones and how they affect our community and how there are public services that aren't being translated, even in Latino-dominant places like Illinois. Don't get me started. right? And so those stories are important. There is going to be a documentary on the Latinx deaf family. Ask me later on Twitter. I don't know what it's called, but I know someone's making it. But yeah, I think once we think we've covered the gamut, we haven't. Because part of what affects representation is the lack of stories and the lack of recording our histories. Like all the colonial stuff you think should be covered and isn't. Babalito. Right. Yeah.
I think I'm not gonna see it in my lifetime. I give up. I really did. But also I'm also excited to see a lot more Latinx shows because we need a lot more in order to get closer to perfection. It will never be perfect. It's just not gonna happen. But we need to be able to at least say that. We have 1,000 shows and none of them are the perfect show, but at least we have 1,000 shows, mm-hmm. You know? So I think I don't think there's a perfect white show. I don't think there's a perfect black show. I don't think there's such thing.
Have you seen Seinfeld? It's pretty good.
You mean the one where they burn the Puerto Rican flag?
Latino show about nothing, that's what
right.
That's it.
We're just like rotten people. We have problems. We get depressed. We're assholes. Like, I want to see that. Yeah. I want to see that because that's closer to my reality than, like, all these other shit.
Kramer,
you know?
Wouldn't exist, though, because, you know, we lock our doors. So he would not be coming into nobody's apartment. Gerardo is going to say no.
It's just
my house.
My biggest problem with all of this is that we are media and Latinx media, because I cannot talk for everything else, is based on classification. Is it queer this? Is it Latinx this? Is it brown this? Is it black this? It's all about those boxes, right? Mm-hmm. And the second, and again, this is utopic, the second we begin to erase those boxes to just show common-ass people who go to the fucking bathroom, maybe we'll get an exciting show like that. YouTube is doing it. YouTube is really getting closer to speaking to larger voices than Netflix. I'm just so scared of Netflix. When they announced $500 million for Latinx shows, I was like, no!
Mexican shows.
Yes, Latinx, yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. Exactly. So. Mm-hmm.
And then there's the algorithms. But that's a whole other conversation.
That's a whole other conversation, yeah.
Okay, any more questions?
I know Brittany had her hand raised.
Brittany.
I feel like we already got there because my question was going to be like, when do you think that we are going to be in a position where Latinos get to be mediocre on TV?
Yeah.
You know, or where like showrunners get to be mediocre or the writers get to be mediocre because there's all of these mediocre ass white people on TV, making TV, directing TV. And it seems like in order to be a Latinx show, like you have to be like the best.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Have you watched Jimmy Fallon's late night show?
Ugh.
He's a host that can't host. I cannot believe that happens. Okay.
I think we're ready. But
yeah.
White supremacy is too strong. So I think it's going to take time.
Mm-hmm.
Like decades.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, calmense. Okay, so.
We always do recommendations on our show, and really quick, I just want to recommend a few podcasts that are in the room today. And so I see the podcast Spicy Eyes is here. If you haven't heard it, it's amazing. It's about food history here in Las Vegas. It's so awesome. And we have Wild and Free podcast here. Yeah, representing. We've done a crossover episode with them. They are so awesome. They're going to have a live show at the East Las Vegas Library soon. Google it, locas. Is there any other podcast in the house today?
Cajun Project. Neon Pacific.
Okay, just say it.
Nicole from Gaysian Project and Neon Pacific is in the room. And Neon Pacific is being primarily directed and supervised by my colleague, Dr. Mark Padungpat. And it's about Asian Americans in Las Vegas.
Ooh, yes! I can't wait.
Oh, and Gaysian Project talks about gay Asians in
gay,
the U.S.
Oh, Gaysian,
and
got
Canada.
It. Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. Does anybody have anything else they want to say?
We're good.
You're good?
Thank you, everybody. Again, thank you to the Barrack. Thank you, Alicia. Thank you, Marcus. Wow, everybody complains about Vegas and there's no support. And look at this room.
We filled it practically.
Yes. Thank you again. And that's it. You?
All right. Shit, I forgot the ending. I haven't done this in a while. And as always, you can email us at latinoswholunch.com if you have any questions, and we might read them on the show. Go to www.latinoswholunch.com for more episodes. And if you have a moment, please go to iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts and rate us 5 stars.
5 stars solamente.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are. And
visibility leads to representation, and representation matters, people.
Today's guest was Dr. Erica Abad. The music you're hearing right now is by the band Brownout. I'm going to put it in after. Thank you so much to the Margie Barrack Museum of Art and the UNLV Department of Art. I'm Fabi Bob.
And I'm Babelito.
And I'm Dr. Abad.
Bye. Bye. Thank you all for coming. This made my year. This made my year, y'all. Thank you. Oh, I have stickers if you didn't get one.